With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the program. Yeah, it's a little bit delayed here because of baseball, but so what? We still got an hour together. My guest today, Alyssa Callow, the urban forager. It's not going out and going through vacant fields and looking for ramps and mushrooms and such. It's about finding the ingredients and the people that use them and the restaurants that provide them and recipes from local communities. And it's just so much more. And one of the recipes that caught me because of the picture, which then, of course, makes it such that we need to talk about Ann Elliott Cutting. She helped Alyssa by taking the photography. Tell us a little bit about Ann.
Well, I met Ann when we were both teaching at Art Center College of Design. It's a college for, focusing on art, and a lot of it commercial art. And she is a phenomenal photographer. And we were talking, and she was saying, I was telling her I was pulling together what I thought was just going to be a collection of recipes. Look what happened. And she said, well, I want to take pictures of your food, so let's start making some appointments. And I'd go to her studio. All the food that you see is real food. It's not the kind that, where they pretend and it's inedible.
Yeah.
So I would be cooking all night and drag it over to her studio, and she was just a genius of lighting and just understanding placement. The photography that you see, though, that is Rumi's, it's really funny. It was not taken in the studio. Rumi invited us over for lunch for his photo shoot, and we thought, well, we'll have a quick little lunch, and then he'll make his food, and she'll do it under absolute optimum situation with lighting and everything else. Oh, no. He had a full course lunch planned with lots of people. So he would bring out a course, and Ann and I would run outside and take a photo of it in the sun and run back in and eat it. So you're seeing here is something that was just about to be eaten by one of us. That's Ann. I mean, she can take photos in the optimum situation in her studio with perfect lighting, and she can go out in the field and just be a really good sport. And of course, and as we were eating and drinking, I kept saying to her, are you okay to keep taking pictures here? Because we had about five courses. And then also she did all the field-based photos, the photos of the people in their stores, So nice. Here we are kind of trying to take photos of people in the store while they're dealing with customers and with uneven light. She's pretty amazing. Anne is the kind of person that can do almost anything. She is also a ceramic artist, so a lot of the serving dishes in the books are Anne's.
Cool.
She'd pull out a dish and say, what do you think? And we'd use it. And she's also a scientist, so she's a little scary smart.
Yeah.
And wonderful person.
Yeah. She takes
so there's
great
a backstory
pictures.
About the photography, too.
I like it. There's so many great recipes that I'd love to hear some of the stories about, but let's pick a couple.
Okay, go ahead.
I mentioned mahogany chicken. It's right behind another chicken recipe. Whose was it? Fingers.
I'll find it.
Eric's roasted chicken.
The most basic chicken. That's my husband.
Yeah.
He's the basic cook in the family. Yep.
And then, of course, two of my favorites that I've yet to have perfect success with either, chicken tikka and chicken and garam masala, but this.
You will do this. You will be fine with this one.
Right.
I promise.
Talk about mahogany chicken. This is one of your own personal recipes?
It is, and it's such an easy recipe. I mean, I started making this when I was at university, and it was based on some chicken I used to eat in Southeast Asia, with sesame oil and peanut oil, soy sauce, lemon, and you just marinate the chicken in that combination and some honey. and it's just delicious. My son is the one who named it Mahogany Chicken. His John, when he was a little boy, he always would say, let's have Mahogany Chicken.
Nice.
And I started calling it that, too. But it is such an easy recipe. I think a lot of your listeners are working parents, and food becomes a onerous task if you don't do a little planning. And my little planning was, stick this chicken in the fridge, marinate it all day, come home and put it in the oven and help your kids with homework.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, this was, I used to call this also hump day chicken because it was Wednesday. It was, when you're just tired, you don't want to do too much. This was, you always have these ingredients. And it's absolutely delicious. I think this is one of the recipes that people send me that they've made, and they say, it was brilliant. It was so delicious. It's easy.
Well,
delicious.
I got to say something. My wife, I got to be careful how I say this. She shuns the use of sweetness in savory dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Everything I fix where I sneak stuff in, she likes. But if I tell her I put a little honey or a little brown sugar in something, she frowns. And the reason you do is the perfect example of why this is called Mahogany Chicken. Because it makes this skin so pretty and brown and crisp. And yeah, all of those ingredients add flavor. And it's, you know, you can stop at the grocery store and buy a rotisserie chicken. And it would never hold a candle to doing this yourself.
No. And you also end up, I mean, I think at the very, very beginning, I don't know if you've seen that, I do a two scenarios where you buy your chicken. You know, and I really, it's called, I think, a plea for planning or something for planning. I don't remember the actual term. And I say, you know, if you just buy your chicken the night before you're going to cook it and do this marinating thing and take some squash and bake the two together and make a little dressing the night before, you're not at the supermarket like my daughter used to do with some screaming little kid at the worst time of the day. You get a scrawny little chicken, no offense, supermarket chicken. And you know, it doesn't taste as good. And the other way is you come home, you put the oven on, you put your feet up, and dinner is making itself known as you relax.
Yeah.
So it is just, a lot of this is just simple how to do stuff that I having grown up cooking, am surprised that people don't know, but they don't if they haven't grown up cooking. It's new news. And so I did spend a lot of time, as you said, with what we call the basics, you know, helping people just learn that one of the best things you can do on the weekend is to create a pantry of stuff that's ready to go and just really adds flavor. Like one of my favorite recipes in this book is creme fraiche.
Oh, yeah.
Just full cream and buttermilk and a little bit of T-I-M-E, and you've got your own creme fraiche. So it's not hard.
And, you know, that last ingredient is one that everyone seems to have trouble pulling off today. T-I-M-E.
Yeah, T-I-M-E, that's it. But it isn't that you're spending more time. It's you're spending a day before than you had expected. And I do say that to people. I said, you can go to the supermarket. You can buy ready-made food. It will take you the exact same amount of time as if you planned it in terms of your hassle, and you did a little marinating or something, and you just, it's truly the same amount of time. It's just when you do it.
And then you are in charge of sodium level and fat and using...
And quality of the meat.
Oh, everything.
Quality of the chicken. I mean, the chickens that you buy that are raw, and you can say, are they organic or not? And some people care and some don't. You can get the size you want. You can decide, wow, I want leftovers so I don't have to cook again the next night. Unless you have a teenage boy, and then there are never any leftovers. That was the first thing I realized when he became a teenager.
I love
that was over with.
Going back to the chicken, and it says, you know, serves four or whatever. And I'm thinking, that's either a real small chicken or it ain't me. If I'm in that group, it serves two, you and me. You get half and I get half.
That's right.
Oh, well.
That's right. I think I have one little subcategory where I say it serves such and such or two callows because we were such big eaters. So,
all right. We got to talk about a dessert. There's so many things I want to talk about, but let's talk about
dessert. Yum.
Chocolate chili truffles.
Oh, so easy and yummy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But wait.
What do you want to know?
No, you said it sounds so easy. And I guarantee you there were people listening going, oh, truffles, you got to roll them into balls and probably got a lot of ingredients, and this seems like it really is easy.
It is. There's, I will say what there are. Semi-sweet chocolate chips, heavy cream, so they're not a diet food. We don't care. Four small dried chilies, a little bit of vanilla extract, sugar, and some unsweetened cocoa powder. And that's what you roll them in. And the only hard thing about this is making them cold enough that they will roll without melting in your hands. And it's dirty. I mean, your hands get really coated in chocolate, but then you get to lick them later, right?
Hey, if it starts melting, I'll eat that one.
Yeah, just eat that one, exactly. But these are really easy. I haven't had a single person have trouble with these, and they're fun to do with kids because kids like to get messy. And you're rolling this chocolate, and then you roll it in unsweetened cocoa, and they're beautiful. And they truffles are really expensive if you buy them.
Oh, yeah.
And these are not. These are good. And you can change the flavors. Let's say you have someone who really doesn't like heat in their chocolate. So you can change it. You can add some orange peel in it or something else. So,
nah, I can't be friends with that person. Gotta have it's that Mexican influence. It's mole. It's hard to find a chocolate dessert in Mexico, but if you do, it probably has either some chilies and or some coffee, all those things are what makes my toes tap. Well,
yes. And is that it? Are we done? Do you have more questions?
Well, yeah, I've got a ton more, but believe it or not, we're out of time for this section. And the book is so cool, Alyssa. I know that you're bound to garner some awards, and I hope you get to go to the Beard House. And
oh my goodness, thank you for that.
It's just such a different way to approach, and you've got so many potential books in you here. You'd have to move to Wichita for a couple months, but you could do Urban Forager, exploring cooking and culinary in northern Wichita.
Can I say one thing about Wichita?
You can.
Or Kansas in general? My son had to do a lot of traveling when he was a project manager for a hospital, and he loved the barbecue in Kansas.
Yeah, we got it.
I'm all in for this because I love finding out what is that. Can I just ask you, is that one of the great, great foods of Wichita, barbecue?
Absolutely. But it's just one.
Yum. One of many.
As you mentioned, when it comes to ethnic food, we have some of the best Asian markets. More importantly, we have some of the best Middle Eastern chefs and cuisine anywhere in the world. Bar maybe some sections of New York, but I doubt it, because Antoine Tobia started a restaurant here that turned into more and more and trained so many chefs. And now if you want hummus, tabbouleh, and everything that goes with it, I can take you to some knock-you-dead places that are just so good and so authentic. And, yeah, you'd love it. Well,
when I'm in Wichita, I get to call you up and ask you to do that?
Oh, hell yeah. You can stay at Chateau Bell.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. You'd be amazed. People ask me, you moved to Wichita in 1990. Why are you still there? Are you kidding me? I'm going to croak here because it's too good. it's too good for so many reasons. And we don't have the traffic of L.A. We don't have the smog of L.A. We have a lot of great restaurants, beautiful opera, beautiful symphony, great events. There's more wine and food events here than anywhere I've ever lived.
I know. I wish I could be there for June 4th.
Yeah.
That sounds really good. So we are planning a road trip where we actually drive across country.
Oh,
so
man.
You will be hearing from me.
So there's another book. A culinary adventure.
That would be very, very large.
Yeah.
thank you so much.
I bet you Anne would love to go with you on that one.
Anne, it would do that. She's an adventurous type. She's great. But thank you so much for your response to the book. It means a lot to me.
Well, it's a good one. Thanks for Trina K to sending me the information. And now, folks, before we say goodbye to Alyssa, I want to give you the opportunity to start calling now. Max is anxiously awaiting by the phone. You know the number. 316-869-1330. Caller number 5, call now. We'll send you a copy of The Urban Forager. Alyssa, have a great weekend, and I hope your Memorial Day is relaxing.
And you too. Thanks, Guy. Bye-bye.
What fun. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.